Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
On today's episode, we are going to talk about the recent sort of motivations of the various protests going on across the country. And one of the main kind of thrusts or policy asks is the abolition of police departments. And we're constantly seeing this concept of ACAB, and this sort of embodies what the protesters are sort of asking for, advocating. So what does ACAB mean? According to Wikipedia, and there actually is a Wikipedia article on this, it means all cops are bastards. It originated in Britain, where the concept of policing originated, and it's intended to be a statement about the institution of policing and makes no statements about individual officers. So in the context of policing, what does it mean to have an institution that is sort of failing?
Yeah, and we'll just jump right into that and ask ourselves just about things like accountability, why the police forces are set up, and what does it really mean when they say all cops are bastards, and can the individual in that class or inside of that institution actually not be corrupt? So when we start talking about all cops are bastards or 1312, we're going to start talking about why people say all cops. It has to do with the institution itself, because it's a corrupting force. And so an individual in this institution has to abide by the rules. And if not, they're going to be sort of, kicked out or pushed out. And it may not be a situation in which they actually want to find themselves in.
So it's a premise that Martin Luther King talked about. And the quote that he used is actually quoting Victor Hugo. And it says, "If a soul is left in the darkness, sins will be committed. The guilty one is not he who commits the sin, but he who causes the darkness." So in the context of the police force, we're not talking about the individual cop. We're talking about the institution. And the institution is darkness. The institution causes these systematic issues that negatively affect the general population. And we saw with the murder of George Floyd that obviously an individual in the community was affected by the institution of police, and he's not the first one. This is a systemic problem.
Yeah, this goes back to why the police institution is set up. And we'll go into it from the point of view of the worker. So the police or any institution right now that we see that's abusive is set up by the ruling class to sort of divide and conquer the worker. And one of the acronyms that we use here at Worker Movement is AWEBGETSTRCAETCDAB, which is super long. It's sort of a expanded ACAB. It actually stands for all workforces employed by government entities that serve the ruling class and enforce the class divide are bastards. And what this means is that all the rules and policies put in place are designed so that the ruling class, those with the money, those with power, are protected by the policing habits or the institution's habits of the working class. And this is, prominent in these protests, that broken window policies, stop and frisk policies, targeting poor neighborhoods for policing are just ways for the institutions to get more funding, get their checklists, get everything that they need in order to seem like an actual institution. And because of that, again, they serve the ruling class or the capitalists, or we'll use the term bourgeois or bourgeoisie, which is the capitalists. They serve them daily, and they kind of hold back and they fight the working class, even though they are members of the working class.
So these police institutions are doing exactly what they're intended to do, which is suppress the workers, suppress the non-ruling class. This is an artifact of history. I mean, I mentioned earlier that it was originating in Britain. It's been a thing all throughout U.S. history. The original police force in the U.S. was centered around recapturing slaves that had escaped as recently as even the 90s. There's references to we need to have more police in communities so that we can control the population. This is the broken window policies of if we stop the minor crimes, the larger crimes won't happen. It's manufacturing an excuse to do enforcement in certain economically disadvantaged areas. without addressing the actual underlying economic problems. Bill Clinton, all throughout the 90s, kept saying, what we need to do is have 100,000 more police officers. What we need to do is have 100,000 more police officers. And over time, everybody in the ruling class was like, all right, well, let's have more cops. If they're going to just enforce the rules for us, then that's fine. We don't care what the ramifications are societally. And we're seeing the kind of manifestation of that concept of this over-militarization, the just sheer number and cost of having a police force versus spending that money on something productive like, say, healthcare or social programs or better schools or safe communities for housing and clean water, all that litany of stuff that could be spent rather than on a militarized police force that exists to protect ruling class interests.
Yeah, I like how you brought up the point about the militarization of it. And we'll just go through really quick what this life cycle looks like. And you should ask yourself as a taxpayer, do you want your money going there? So the government enables and allows and actually promotes police forces to buy surplus weapons and surplus gear and then use that against its own civilians when it comes to things like peaceful protests or exercising any of your rights. And so there's no reason why cops need to have complete SWAT forces that spend all day training instead of out actually policing. There's no idea they need, there's no reason for people movers, for drones. They have no reason to have automatic weapons, sniper rifles, or trained snipers. I mean, a lot of these things that the movie has sort of sensationalized are not needed for any modern police force. In fact, moving out to the community is what they need. And so if we go back to this life cycle or the system analysis of this, it seems as if it's just a giveaway to the large ammunition and weapon suppliers, because they know if they make excess surplus weapons, it'll go trickle down to the cities. And it's your tax money that goes to buying these. So every time you pay taxes, whether or not it's a local sales tax, a localized or county sales tax, whether or not it's your land tax or a percentage on your worker, you're paying for this militarization. And in fact, you're paying for all the lawsuits. You're paying for all of the times that they come and they overextend themselves, when they park in fire lanes to go shopping on the government time. They do all the things that are used to find to be broken. They speed through traffic lights, they're putting the sirens on, all the small broken window crimes they commit, they're committing on tax dollars. And this is part of the institution of that corruption. So it's a whole giant cycle in which not only does the institution corrupt the individual, but the institution is designed to be corrupt.
So the institution is centered around perhaps transfers of wealth associated with ammunition supply. And it becomes a lot more complicated to deconstruct the police force when you have ruling class interest in perpetuating the police force because there's money. So if you're a weapons manufacturer and you make, let's say, tear gas, and all of a sudden people start talking about, hey, we should get rid of the cops. You're like, ooh, that's my bottom line. So you can start lobbying, you can start buying politicians. And this has been going on for years and years and years and years. So this isn't a new thing. There are absolutely entrenched interests in all the various city councils and state legislatures that are tied to basically the kind of nationalized defense industry. It's not national defense like building fighter jets or whatever, but weapons manufacturing is its own small cottage industry that largely profits off the backs of taxpayers funding local cops and having tanks and armored vehicles and just a bunch of stuff. And it really is kind of a misappropriation of city state resources, and it's this hard cycle to break. And this is one of the things that the protesters keep raising, is what could we do with this money instead? And so this has kind of become a policy discussion. And it doesn't really appear as though any of the national actors have any coherent policy that's even marginally going to address some of these issues.
Yeah, and if we continue on this path about, you know, what this institution and what it means to police, the question becomes then is when we have an individual that's within the police force, you know, that wants to do the right thing, what happens to them? What is this thin blue line? What does it mean to be corrupted? And if we're going to focus, drill down a little bit into the institution before we pull back out. One of the issues that we're going to have is that it fundamentally, and if we talk talk through it in sort of a game theory mentality, like we tend to do on the show, the vested interest is basically promotion. So the vested interest is the individual who is a police officer. And so if you have to, just like you do in a corporation, play the game to move up, to get your awards, to get your certifications, to remain employed, to get more hours, to get everything that you look forward to, vacation time and all the things that you would see even in a regular corporate job, then you would see that things like writing tickets or lying about drug possessions, because drug possession gets a better prosecution, which looks like your police force is doing better things. So planting evidence is actually something that has to be done in order for the police force themselves to look good. So the cost benefit analysis says no one's holding us accountable. No one's checking in on whether or not we're planting drugs. This one person, it will be going to jail, but in the end, we're all getting more things and getting more funding, and it's better for us. And so from an individual's point of view on the police side, it's in their nature to do these things. And that's why it's really hard to break this institution and why everybody's calling for the abolishment, to just destroy it and bring it down, because it has been corrupted from the person walking the streets all the way up to the person that's rose to the ranks to become the commissioner, because those are the ways that they rose to the ranks, by just lying and cheating and scratching and clawing and fighting their way to the top. And there's nothing you can do about that because it's entrenched in there. It has to do with the prosecution. Prosecutors pat them on the back and laud them for all the ways they bring criminals in. The judges laud them for cleaning up the streets. Politicians love them for cleaning up the streets. Suburbanites love them for making them feel like they're safe, even though they're really not any different because of where they live. So again, the whole entire cycle and system is designed to allow the broken windows and corruption to exist in order to help the individual police officer. And they will continue on that, because if they don't, there's ramifications. And so if you think of it like a team sport, if you're not a team player, then you get benched, you don't get the times you want. And in fact, the team may actually turn against you.
Yeah, so it's all based on incentives and sort of false incentives. So you talked about a little bit about how you don't want to prosecute the crimes that are hard to prosecute. You want to prosecute the crimes that are easier to prosecute, because then you can have a higher clearance rate and you can have a better conviction rate and you can, you know, accrue more money in fines. You can justify the police existing because you're able to say, well, we went out there and, you know, identified 7 broken windows and wrote 7 tickets and got convictions for window breakers or whatever that means. And then from the individual cop, there's plenty of incentives to partake in those activities. There's also incentives not to snitch on your fellow teammates. Because it is a team sport. If you call for backup and you're at a burglary and you just recently snitched on your fellow workers, they might be disinclined to come and provide backup for you. So there's some inherent risks by speaking out in certain situations that kind of the culture has reinforced. And this is true in a number of jobs. It's not unique to cops. So with firemen, it's similar too, where if you're in a burning building and you need backup and somebody doesn't care, they let the building collapse on you or something. And these are kind of extreme examples, but they're examples of retaliation occurring in response to whistleblowing. And most whistleblowing occurs in kind of the white collar context, where you sit in an office and nobody ever cares. It's some long drawn out legal process. And at the end of the day, you know, the Justice Department incarcerates you because Obama doesn't like whistleblowers or something. So in the very specific example of George Floyd, you have one of the officers, which allegedly was kind of verbally directing the main kneeler to, should we check the pulse? I don't know exactly what it is, but this is just kind of media reports of what the verbal kind of directives were. But at that time, you're in a really bad situation as an individual cop, because how do you de-escalate the situation? You either do nothing and a man dies, or you tackle your commanding officer and get tased and then written up, and then you're ejected from the force, which further kind of perpetuates the good cops get thrown out of the force, which I guess is what the institution wants, which is why it needs to be torn down.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so if you look at an individual's point of view, you do not want to be on the receiving end of retaliation. And you can see this sensationalized in cop shows where, you know, the internal affairs are trying to investigate. These are all real things. You don't want to snitch because the retaliation is real. If you need backup and no one's there to back you up, then it's basically a death sentence. And this is, again, why the policing has went from this, you know, this vision or this beautiful grand idea that they're there to help the community. It was never really there, but that's what they tell you. They teach you that they're the good guys. To this actual corrupt system, which they're not the good guys. They are the bad guys are part of the problem. Because in the end, they're not policing to help society. They're policing to help themselves. And this is where the institution itself is what is corrupted. And besides that, there is no accountability because everybody trusts the police officers. So, you know, you go to court and they are trusted beyond you. And I'm not sure why, but that's the way it is. They can turn off body cams. That's not an issue. They can lie on police reports. They don't get rung up for anything, you know, for lying or obstructing justice. But you would. And this is, again, back to that idea that a corrupt system cannot be changed. A tree that grows crooked will never be straight. That's some Ryan Gosling movie. I just remember that quote from a long time ago. But basically, we have to come up with a new idea and policy. And what we found right now is there's a lack of leadership on the left that has these policies. And so what we're seeing right now is these neoliberal sort of insanity trying to fill this void. Because what we've come to know is that under disaster capitalism, which Naomi Klein had sort of just wrote about, when these catastrophes happen or these unrests or protests or you know hurricanes or disasters happen, there's people who already have plans in place to utilize the basically the chaos as a way to create change. And so chaotic change, havoc change allows you to put things in place while no one's looking. But that doesn't actually exist on the left because there's no sort of unified left body. There's no think tanks. There's no leadership on the left. That's all been torn down in the last 60 years. And we're left with this bullshit, sorry for the swearing there, neoliberal sort of, fill. You know, we have the Barack Obama sort of filler, which is the drones. If I kill drones, it's okay. We'll use tax money to do these things. We'll use money to help the poor, even though we're not really helping them. And we end up with something as insane as these Eight Can't Wait, which is a new campaign of how to decrease violence from the police report or the police force. But we're not asking for them to decrease violence. We're asking for an entire cultural change, an entire sort of dismantling of what we know policing to be. And so I'll rattle off the eight, I guess, things that they want to talk about, which is ban chokeholds and strangleholds, which I'm not really sure why those aren't already banned. It seems like a no-brainer. It shouldn't even be on the list. Require de-escalation. I don't even know why a police officer would be able to escalate anything. Screaming at somebody doesn't make any fucking sense. Sorry, swearing again. You have to beep that out.
We get like three or something an episode, right?
Yeah, FCC will come and hit us up.
Crack down on our
this idea of require warning before shooting. How about no shooting at all and remove the guns? We don't need guns.
How about no guns?
I don't understand this. Exhaust all other means before shooting. And again, an officer who spends their entire
don't have guns doesn't matter.
Yeah, don't have guns doesn't matter. But we'll circle back to this one. We'll talk about police training in a second. Duty to intervene. So that's asking like the two rookies that were 4 and 5 days on the job to hit somebody or stop somebody who has 20 years of experience as if that's what you do. I could never tell an engineer with 20 years of experience they were wrong, even if I knew it. I could never tell a gardener with 20 years of experience that they were wrong, even though I might be a new at that. It doesn't make any sense. I couldn't tell a doctor with 20 years of experience as a doctor. It doesn't matter. You're not going to tell somebody not, you know, to interview in that way. Ban shooting at moving vehicles. Again, discharging a firearm in any city setting should be illegal since it's illegal for me. I don't understand how you can shoot at a moving target. Require use of force continuum. Again, that's just nonsense because the training doesn't allow for the continuum. And then require comprehensive reporting is it's like saying, Jimmy, were you good today? And the Jimmy says, yeah, I was good today. Please tell me what you did. I was
fuck
a good boy.
Yeah, Mom.
That doesn't make any sense.
We used our three up just then, so I think it was worth it, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about police training. And so this is another way where your tax money goes basically out the door. They bring in these private firms who are ex-military or ex-Mossad Israel or some nutty ass thing. And they spend their time training them worst solutions, right? Like they're going to get into a gun battle with 45 like gang members or something. And they have to be tactically aware of everything going on. Everybody has a knife and everybody's trying to kill them. But that's not their encounters, because most of us listening here have never pulled a knife or a gun on a cop. And so majority of the population never would do that. And so those scenarios shouldn't exist. The scenarios that should be planned out are those like, what happens if you encounter a deaf person? Do you shoot them because they're not following your orders? Well, that happened, right? There's a guy laying on the ground with his hands in the air. And do you shoot them? Okay, yeah. There's a guy on his hands and knees crawling to you in a hotel room begging for your life. Do you kill him? Sure, you do. I mean, those are what the cops have done. And there's so many examples in the past because, again, they're only trained to kill. They're trained in every situation to pull their gun and fire. They're not trained to mace you or tase you. They're designed to pull their whatever their working firearm is at the time and center mass you. That's it. There's no wrestling. Unless you're white, I guess, maybe they wrestle you to the ground or take you out to dinner or something. But, you know,
or if you're Joe Biden, you get shot in the leg.
Yeah. And so, they're shooting protesters right now, rubber bullets in the face. I mean, a reporter in Minnesota was just shot in the eye, lost her eye. Right. I mean, it's no different.
Photojournalist.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're right. Yeah. Who needs her eye to work?
Needs her eye for her occupation.
Yeah, we can talk about capitalism and why you're only as good as your body is available to have, but we'll talk about that in another episode. So this eight can wait is a joke. It should be defund now. It should be full accountability now. It should be removal of the prosecuting office as the chief law enforcement officer in the county. There should be grand juries who are not ex-police that are pulling people in. I mean, we should abolish grand juries. That's insane. There should be review boards. I mean, honestly, there's so many other options you could do than these eight. In fact, just abolishing the police force and hiring community service officers whose job it is to just, you know, be part of the community and make sure people are safe and healthy would go a lot more than this. In fact, abolishing capitalism, I think, would solve all our problems. But taking back the workers, taking back the means of production would solve a ton of these problems. But again, we have that policing. And I've been rambling for a while, so I'll kick it off to the other guy.
So the we have these eight ideas, and they're generally kind of just unimaginative, minimum effort. What's the least amount we can do? And there's some very basic kind of new rules that we could impose. And one of them is, okay, do we need to have guns? Okay, let's say we do. What if you fire your gun, you are no longer a police officer? Your employment ends and you can't ever be a police officer again. Which whether it's realistic or not, it's a game theory move that creates a different kind of motivation structure, which is there are consequences to firing your weapon, which are personal. It protects the community collectively. And if the situation arises where you are actually in harm, it should be worth it to, you know, potentially use lethal force to defend yourself. And if that's the situation, you know, you're no longer a police officer, that's unfortunate, but you get some job retraining and, you know, you land on your feet. The goal of every police officer should be to never, ever use their weapon. And I don't really see that on the eight. Eight can't wait. Three of them talk about guns, and it's just like, what are we doing? You see the national Dems, you know, introducing the Justice in Policing, you know, Act or something, and it's like, okay, this has been sitting in the House for how long? Who knows? And you know, one of the major things it does is ban chokeholds, and it's like, okay, why, like, just do it. We don't need like some grandiose act where everybody throws on, you know, canty conti cloth and kneels, you know, in the office as some grand performative act of action. That
No,
was
I
my
love it.
rant.
It's the same idea. I mean, it goes back to the lack of leadership and what does it mean to lead? And what does it mean to actually understand systems? And so we talk a lot about game theory and systems level thinking here. And if the problem is that the institution corrupts because there's no accountability, institution corrupts because the individual is rewarded for their actions, then you have to remove that. And I love the idea of you discharge, you don't get to be a police officer anymore. And because we need to separate the two jobs or two roles, everybody seems to conflate together. There are roles of individuals whose job it is to police on a daily second, day by day operation. So you have your speeders, you have your warrants, you have your drug dealers, you have your basic petty crimes. You have to do a standard vehicle report. So that doesn't have to be a police officer that's armed. If you're in a traffic accident, you don't need a gun. You just need someone to come and be a sworn officer of the court to take your written record. Just like if you have something stolen, it's not going to be some crazy robbery case in which you're going to bring in, 30 detectives and experts. You're going to write a police report and file an insurance claim. And so a lot of what the police do is actually just private property sort of, I don't know, documentation. Really, I mean, they're just accidents and larceny and other silly just record keeping. Another part of policing that doesn't need to be sort of weaponized is traffic stops, in which officers are allowed to pull you over for nonsense, and then they use it to escalate. And this whole bullshit, or sorry, this whole idea about de-escalation first, pulling somebody over and knowing that there could be a loss of life because we've seen cops execute people while they pull them over, is not de-escalation. That's insane to me. No one wants to be pulled over by someone who has a gun, who has their hand on the hip as they walk up. So de-escalation and removal of the gun means that an individual can do a traffic stop without needing a handgun. I mean, if you think somebody has a weapon, then you can call for backup if you need to. And then you can have, your police force that can talk somebody out of the vehicle. And I guess de-escalation works. But at that point, it doesn't make any sense to have an officer whose job it is for civil service to be involved. Just like if there's a bank robbery, you're not going to chase the suspects. You're going to track them down and get them when they're, sleeping or whatever. You're not going to go ahead.
No, you're gonna shoot them in their moving vehicle right now
That's true.
because
Yeah, this isn't the
it
movie
can't
Heat
wait,
where you're
hasn't been
just going
implemented
to
yet.
take downtown LA and start just, laying out rounds everywhere and hope you don't blow through someone's wall with, your AR, right? Your 563 just blasting through everybody's brick wall. This doesn't make any sense. I mean, again, you're talking about people whose majority of their day is driving around, sitting, doing nothing, just wasting taxpayer money, not providing community service, waiting for somebody to make a small crime so that they can go and be a hero. And that is not what the institution is or needs to be. It is not what we need. We need actually community service people whose job it is to make the community safer.
And the and one of the recent things that's happened in Minnesota is that the Minneapolis School Board has outlawed, I shouldn't say outlawed, but they've severed the contract with the Minneapolis Police Department to have officers in public schools. And this is just one of those kind of nominally insane things that just goes on everywhere where we have cops in our schools, and it's like, why? Why do we need an armed individual in schools? And people would say, oh, it's for protect school shooters, but or protect the kids from school shooters, but how many school shootings have been prevented by a cop being
And let's
present? The answer
just
is zero.
step in real quick and say that the Supreme Court has ruled that an officer does not have to risk their life to save you. That's not their job. And that's the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court also ruled that a police officer doesn't actually have to know the law. They just have to suspect that a crime was committed to pull you over and arrest you or just arrest you. So now we have an instance in which the institution doesn't actually have to know the law that they are responsible for carrying out the orders for. And they don't actually have to serve you in the way that you expect them to serve you, which is risking your life, which is what all the bootlicking chuds with the Blue Lives Matter sticker say. Well, next time I won't risk my life for you. You don't have to anyways. It's your choice. I mean, game theory says don't risk your life because if it's between me and you, I want to go home to my family. I'm not going to take the bullet for you because I have kids too. I mean, that's human nature and realistic. So it's actually an insane expectation that the police officers are going to want to take a bullet for you. I'm sorry, it's a small rant. I'll kick it back off to you.
Yeah, it's just from an effective perspective too, is if there's an active shooter, hypothetically, and there's a police officer on the scene, the police officer likely doesn't have enough information to even act coherently. And then step in and make the correct decision. Like, there's just an insane amount of fog of war kind of actions that nobody is equipped to handle. And we expect, you know, individual officers to save everybody during a mass casualty event is super stupid too. And so there's some expectations that we should have for law enforcement, and there's some expectations that we should not have for law enforcement. And the entire expectation is absolutely completely skewed right now and results in pretty much terrible
outcomes. Yeah, let me summarize this before we kick off this episode or end this episode. So what we're saying here is that the individual police officer and the institution are both corrupt because the institution will corrupt the individual, because that's just the way that the reward structure is set up for an individual police officer. Now, you can say over time they get more jaded and et cetera, but in general, what I'm getting at is the institution will corrupt the individual. Your tax dollars goes to this corruption, to police whatever the police want to do, because there's no accountability, because the structures, again, are rewarding, because leadership has grown through the ranks and they're going to reward the same structures that rewarded them. And finally, what we're saying is that the police department is one of many government institutions that protect the rich. And we haven't even went into all those other institutions. And so we'll leave you with the idea that ACAB, or all cops are bastard, is equivalent to saying that all workforces employed by government entities that serve the ruling class and enforce a class divide are bastards. Because what they've done is they've distracted from the white collar crimes and focused only on blue collar. So things like wage theft do not get policed. But things like, you know, petty larceny, where you stole $20 from the till because you're hungry, you go to jail for that. But the person who doesn't pay you overtime, who stole $200 from you, is allowed to keep running their business. And that'll be a future episode.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.